Morning. It's good to see you here today. We're happy to have you. And I already missed the beginning bell, so that may not speak too well to how we do this morning. I've already messed up where I got started. In just a moment, we're going to have a prayer. Michael's going to lead us in it before we get started. But I wanted to. We're going to do something a little different this morning. We're going to read through the text, and I'd like you to just take a moment and think about what the text is and how it applies to you, and really just work through some applications that we can take from these verses. So that way, if I don't get to any of them, at least you've got something to go back and say, this is what this chapter is about. So we'll do that in just a moment. So let's, I think we're pretty well settled now. Let's ask Michael to lead us in a word of prayer. Amen. Thank you. So we're studying Hebrews, and just wanted to start by really commending Barry for the job he did. We covered a lot of material, and he hit a lot of what was in the chapters. I probably will not do as good a job as far as trying to touch on all the points. I think I did get a little luckier. We've got kind of some smaller passages that I'm going to be going through, at least for the next four lessons. So you may really appreciate Barry by the end of these four lessons that I go through and realize what a good job he did. But I wanted to start, we're going to kind of do a quick review, but I wanted to kind of maybe give you some encouragement to keep going. I know the material, when people heard, well, you're teaching Hebrews, it's like, oh no, that's a tough book. And now that we're five chapters into it, I just wanted to encourage you to stay with it. There's so much you can get out of this book. And I think back to the gospel meeting we had recently where we talked about really the depth of the Old Testament and the things that we can pick up by studying from the Old Testament. And don't you see this as we study Hebrews? I mean, Hebrews, we talked about, well, I'm not Jewish, so some of these things don't really mean as much to me, but if we understand the concepts and some of these stories of the Old Testament, it just teaches us so much about God and about Jesus as we go through this. So I wanted to just start with kind of giving you some tips as we studied. And I've struggled a little as I look through this. you'll have a verse that talks about something, and then two chapters later, you got more verses on it. And so it just, if you go in and you just look at a chapter at a time, a lot of times you say, well, we already talked about that. Why is he bringing it up again? So the first thing that I would encourage you to do is go back and read all the chapters leading up to where we are today. So we're in chapter 5 now. What I'd like you to do next time is just try to read all the way up to the chapter that we're studying. And I think if you do that, you'll see my second point there, you'll see the flow, the logical progression. And it'll be easier to understand what we're studying. And I think the other part, every time I've read this, I've picked up something different each time I've read through it. It's a very deep, meaningful book. And if you approach the study in that way, I think you'll get a lot more from it. I know I have, as I've had to study and know that I'm going to be teaching some of this. And there are some hard things in the book, and we're going to get into some of those even in the next couple classes. So I think a lot of the difficulty that people have with Hebrews comes in the fact that they don't really take some of these passages in context of what is in the rest of the book. So I think that'll help you as you go through that, if you can remember that. And I would just say another thing that I've kind of noticed as I've studied for this class is there is a pattern to how the author talks through this, how he makes the arguments to the reader. And this is kind of, it turns out a pretty good size. Chapter 1 and 2, he argues that Jesus is greater than the angels. And then he follows that up with this exhortation that you need to be obedient to the Son. That gets him into chapter 3 and 4, where he says the Son is greater than Moses. He follows that with the exhortation, don't make the mistake of the Exodus generation. Chapter 5, the Son is able to be priest. That's what we're going to talk about today. And this exhortation, don't be spiritually immature, which is chapter 6. But you'll see that pattern as you go through this. And we'll talk about this argument about Melchizedek in chapter 7. And really from chapter 10 through the end of the book is really just one large exhortation. So just look for those patterns. I think that'll also help you in your study. All right, just for those that are new or visiting with us, we'll just do a quick overview of where we are right now. The problem that we're dealing with in Hebrews is Christians that were confused in their faith. We know they were persecuted and alienated. They were losing their zeal, discouraged, spiritually immature. We're going to spend a lesson talking about that on Wednesday. Drifting from their old faith in Christ and turning back to the old covenant. So that's the problems that the author is dealing with. And the purpose of this book is to inform their faith more perfectly, to instruct them about the superiority of the Son, encourage them not to forsake Christ and to follow His examples and other faithful men and women's examples. We think about the chapter 11 and the great examples there. Remind them of basic truths and uniqueness and the greatness of Christianity in contrast with Judaism. And we're going to be dealing with some of that today. Warn them about the consequences of forsaking Christ. And we, Barry put together this chart that kind of shows the outline of the book. And I think we're going to be dealing with the middle section here, chapter 4, 14 through 10, 18. And it's a big section that deals with the superiority of Christ. And I was in a training class this past week, and we were all together, and our instructor gave us the answer to the class. He said, no matter what the question is, the answer was confidence. So we figured out what the class was. But that was the answer to everything. And as we think of Hebrews, if we had to come up with one answer for everything, what is the answer that we would give? Christ is superior. Christ is better. And we had this, I thought we had this slide. I think we'll get to it in a minute. But in just a moment, we're going to look at a slide that lists the places where it says, Christ is better. Christ is better. And that's just the theme. So if we have a question you're not sure about, just write down Christ is better or Christ is superior, and you got a good chance of getting it right. So that's a main thought that we see through here. And we looked at chapter 1, and I think these are kind of a good overview to help us kind of set where we are today. But really the big picture of chapter 1 is the preeminent Son, superior to the angels, God's greatest spokesman. And if we look down at that little, the bottom outline that that Barry has down there, Christ the Son of God, and then chapter 2, Christ the Son of Man, and that idea of Christ being higher than the angels and then being made a little lower than the angels is the idea there. So in chapter 2, we said the big picture was the exalted Son became a man in order to taste death for all and elevate man. Chapter 3, the Son is greater than Moses, the lawgiver and intercessor, and don't harden your hearts like the Exodus generation. Chapter 4, the big picture was a promise remains of entering His rest, and failure and success depends on faith. So that gets us to where we'll be studying today, which is chapter 5. We're going to pick up a couple verses from chapter 4 because they really go with the discussion in chapter 5. But the idea there is Christ is supremely qualified as our high priest. He's compassionate, chosen from men, and called by God. So that's the main themes that we'll be picking up on. And here's my better slide that I put together. And you look how many times that is used in the chapter there, that Christ is better. And I think as we look at this and think about what the people were going through, and as we think about the sacrifice and all the things that they had to do, it's like, you know, do they really have to be reminded that Christ is better? And we're going to talk a little bit more about why that might be. But keep that in mind as we go through today's lesson. And I've broken the themes of today's lesson into these three bullets. We're going to just pick up on those couple verses about the compassionate Christ and talk a little bit about what that means for us. And then the second, we're going to talk about what a high priest did and around his role and what his qualifications were. And then Christ as our high priest, we'll talk about that also. And I wanted to set what we're studying today in kind of context of this whole middle section. We said this middle section was on Christ, the great high priest. Chapter 5, 1 through 10, talks. We just mentioned Christ as our qualified as our high priest. And then our next lesson, we're going to get into the need for progress by the readers, their rebuke for their immaturity, threatened by the possibility of apostasy, encouraged to hold to their hope. That's 11 through 6:20. And then next Sunday, we'll have be an interesting class. We're going to talk about Melchizedek and what those verses mean. Discussion about that, but we'll try to break down what those verses mean. And really, that verse about Jesus being a priest after the order of Melchizedek is really what that whole middle part of the book is about. If you think 7 through 10, that's what that section is, breaking down that one verse in Psalms and explaining it to us. So we'll be looking at that. And then 8 through 10 is a section on the two covenants and the superior ministry of Christ's priesthood. So I've thrown a lot of bullets up there already, but hopefully this helps you understand where we are in the book and in the context of what we're going to be studying, and remind you of what we've studied in the past. So I wanted to begin. Let's read these verses here, and I think I'm going to do something a little different. I'm going to ask Nathan to go ahead and read. And what I want to do, as I mentioned earlier, I want us to read, we're going to read 14 through 16, and then let's go ahead and read 5 through 10. 1 through 10 of chapter 5. And what I'd like you to do is just listen to the flow of the passage. And if you got a pen or something there, you can do it, make a note in your mind. Think about what these passages are about, and specifically, what does it mean to me? How does it impact me as we read this? So, Nathan, if you could begin, let's read 4:14 through 5:10.
Seeing then that we have a great high priest who has passed through the heavens, Jesus, the Son of God, let us hold fast our confession. For we do not have a high priest who cannot sympathize with our weaknesses, but was in all points tempted as we are, yet without sin. Therefore, let us therefore come boldly to the throne of grace, that we may obtain mercy and find grace to help in time of need. For every high priest taken from among men is appointed for men in things pertaining to God, that he may offer both gifts and sacrifices for sins. He can have compassion on those who are ignorant and going astray, since he himself is also subject to weakness. Because of this, he is required, as for the people, so also for himself, to offer sacrifices for sins. And no man takes this honor to himself, But he who was called by God, just as Aaron was, a priest forever. Just as Aaron was, so also Christ did not glorify himself to become high priest, but it was he who said to him, "You are my son, today I have begotten you." As he also says in another place, "You are a priest forever, according to the order of Melchizedek." Who in the days of his flesh, when he had offered up prayers and supplications, with vehement cries and tears to him who was able to save him from death, and was heard because of his godly fear, though he was a son, yet learned obedience by the things that he had suffered. And having been perfected, he became the author and eternal salvation to all who obey him, called by God as high priest, according to the order of Melchizedek.
All right, so we just read, think a minute, look at those verses, see if you can pick a couple things out or some thoughts in there that you would say as an application for you as we move forward. So we'll just take like 30 seconds. All right, so let's begin by looking at these verses here in chapter 4. And really, as we look at these verses, these are kind of a transition from what we studied in 4. We see the word seen in that. So what we've studied before, and really this is an introduction to what we're going to study the end of chapter 4 and chapter 5. A couple things I'll remind you of when we met Wednesday. If Barry kind of ended the class talking about the throne of judgment, and he talked about this idea of the throat being laid bare. You remember that? Now contrast that with this verse here, talking about our high priest. And if you look toward the if you look in verse 16 there, it's not called the throne of judgment. What is it now? The throne of grace. So we see that that distinction made there, and this idea that we can go and obtain mercy and find grace to help in a time of need. So that's kind of where the difference between what we were talking about Wednesday and the judgment versus this great compassionate high priest that we're talking about now. All right, and one thing that may have been a surprise to these folks is that, yes, Christians do have a high priest. We've talked before about what they had been accustomed to in Judaism, and you know, the author here is saying, yes, we do have a high priest, and he's greater than Aaron and all the priests. This idea of who's passed through the heavens, does that mean Jesus just he shot across the skies like a jet? What are we saying there? What kind of language is that? He's passed through the heavens.
Sure.
That's exactly right. He was there and he left and he's gone back. But what else does that remind us of, passing through something? Right. This is the language that they would have known, that they passed through the veil. And that's what Jesus has done into heaven, except he's not in an area that is a representation of where God is. He is in heaven at God's right hand. Yes, sir. Very good. And for those that couldn't hear, the comment is that he's experienced everything. And we're going to build on that as we go through this text, and especially into the into chapter 5, we're going to see that. In the next couple verses here, we're going to talk about that. Another mark of greatness is suggested by the designation of Jesus as the Son of God. We know Jesus, the Son of God, joining together the human and divine natures of the high priest. And one other thing you'll notice as we go through this study is you'll see a lot of this reference, "let us," admonition. And in this particular case, we're talking about confession, and it's mentioned in, it's the same confession that's mentioned in Hebrews 3:1 and 10:23, if you want to go back and look at those later. But this idea of "let us," there is actually four times it's used in chapter 4. And it's used several, even beyond that, we'll look at some other times that it's used in the next slide. But in 4:1, it says, "let us fear." In 4:11, "let us strive to enter that into that rest." And I think we can say that if there's ever a verse that says, "let's try to get to heaven," that's what that verse is. You know, strive to enter that rest. "Let us hold fast to our confession" in 4:14. And in just a minute, we're going to have another "let us," which is, "let us draw near with boldness into the throne of grace." And if you look at the use of that throughout the book, you can see this is a device he uses several times. "Let us do this." It's an admonition to get busy and do something. All right, verse 15. I think it's interesting that if we look at the Greek word for sympathize, a lot of times you look at these words and there's so much more meaning than, you know, in the original language. So as I looked at this, it said it's literally to suffer with. See, suffering of another, not from the outside, but the feeling of one who enters into suffering and makes it his own. And that's a powerful thing to be able to say that Jesus feels our pain and our difficulties in a way. It's just not, you know, someone up above looking and you know, just acknowledging it. He feels it as it's his own. And that's the love he has for us. Exalted but concerned about the human predicament. Yes, sir? Right, the point, for those who couldn't hear, he wept with them. James? Yes.
When we understand what verse 15 says, it gives us the boldness and the confidence to go to the grave, the throne of grace and mercy. Because he understands where we're going. When you know what someone not just understands, but has gone through those things, it makes you easier, it makes it easier to approach them.
Very good. Mm-hmm. All right, this we're going to build on that idea that we have that Jesus was a high priest and he was one of the people. And that's one of the points in chapter 5 that we're going to talk about in just a moment. He was tempted as we are, like men physically and like them in resisting sin. And if you think about it, he felt the full force of temptations from all sides, from the tempter. And we're going to talk a little more on that as we get into the next chapter. Since Jesus knows the power of sin and understands sinners, let us draw near. Strikes that the keynote of the book, the religion of Christ, is the religion of access to God. Christ's sympathy and suffering for mankind made this access possible. The way to God, so long closed, is now open. It is possible to speak of the throne of grace on which God sits with Christ at his right and deals benevolently with all those approaching him. A beautiful thought there, isn't it? And then finally, this idea of boldness, another kind of word expansion on that word there, this parousia, which means full story. And that term was used in ancient Greek. It denoted the right of a full citizen to speak his mind on any subject in the town assembly, a right a slave did not have. In the epistle, It stands for freedom to approach God's throne on the basis of the blood of Jesus. And we're going to talk more about that in chapter 10. And the throne is, at God's throne is timely help that is needed in the hour of temptation. Yes, sir.
One thing that I think is important to understand as far as that throne.
not like we could go somewhere else and Christ didn't fulfill what he fulfilled. And it's not like we can come before God without coming through Jesus. It was the only access we had. And Christ came through by the Son of God.
Very good. The point was made that this is that's the only access to God. And we're gonna build on that in the next lesson as we look at this warning against apostasy. And I think that's part of the point there is that if you don't have Jesus, there is no way to God. And that's really what this verse is saying as we transition to the next point. And I just wanted to remind you we spent a little time talking about really this idea of the Judaism being very carnal, and I mean carnal not in a evil way, but a worldly. You know, you could actually see the things. It was very the thing you could experience. You could see it in a different way than what we're talking about. And part of that was what the priest wore, and the we talked about this privilege of entering the holy. Of holies, and Barry had put a slide together that kind of laid out some of those. Oh, went too far. They laid out some of those things, the difference between the things that they saw with Judaism versus these spiritual applications of these, and really the Judaism was just a type of these things that were that we see the full. Definition of in Christianity. So that would have been something difficult for them. So we'll move on into to chapter 5 at this point. And I want to start by saying, what does a priest do? What did a priest do at this time? What's that? Very good. He's a mediator. And we use the term intercessor. And why is a priest needed? All right, why couldn't we approach God on our own? Sin. That's what the priest did. He interceded for the people because of their sin. And what kind of relationship do you want your intercessor to have with God? You want to go, and I'll use an example here. Let's say... Vaughn and Larry are in a disagreement here. And so, all right, Vaughn's wrong. And they're almost ready to fight over it. And I come in and I say, Vaughn, be good to Larry. Larry didn't really mean it. Or I say, well, Larry did mean it, but, Larry's okay. Please, Vaughn, don't punch him. So in that point, I'm interceding for Larry in that point. And as we think about that, if Vaughn doesn't really know me that well, or he doesn't like me either, then Larry's in trouble, right? So I may be in trouble also with Vaughn. But anyway, that's just an example of an intercessor, and that's what we're talking about. And that's why Moses was so amazing for the people. There's so many examples of him interceding for the people, where God was just ready to wipe them out and start over again. And this verse in Exodus 33 says, "The Lord said to Moses, 'This very thing that you have spoken, I will do. For you have found favor in my sight, and I know you by name.'" It's a incredible verse, and we see. How much it helped the people of Israel as they got in trouble, that Moses was pleading for them. So a great example. My example wasn't too good, but this is a great example of an intercessor that you want somebody that God knows and has favor with. All right, I ask this question as we look at these verses: do any of us have a problem accepting the idea that the Messiah was a priest and a king? So they may have difficulty accepting that. I don't. Yeah, definitely if you don't believe. But I'm thinking as we're going through these passages about the Messiah being able, is also a priest. I mean, to us, that's not really that big a deal, is it? I mean, yes, I see that, and I agree with that. But that's not the case with the people that we're talking about, and we'll talk about that in a minute. Yes, sir. Very good, and we're actually going to talk about that in just a minute. You're setting me up perfectly for my next slides here. But if you were a Jew 2,000 years ago, would you expect the Messiah to be a priest and a king? No, this would not be something that was really clear to them. And why would that be? Right, the priest had to be a Levite. And what do we know about the Messiah? He was from the line of David and the tribe of Judah. So that right there we see, you know, there's a problem here that we have to deal with. And this kind of follows up. Jesus wasn't a Levi, and we know that in the line of David, David wasn't a priest, Solomon wasn't a priest, Rehoboam wasn't a priest. These people were not priest. So, as we look at, let's go ahead and let me read the first few verses of chapter 5 again. For every high priest chosen from among men is appointed to act on behalf of men in relation to God, to offer gifts and sacrifices for sin. He can deal gently with the ignorant and the wayward, since he himself is beset with weakness. Because of this, he is obligated to offer sacrifice for his own sins, just as he does for those of the people. And no one takes this honor for himself, but only when called by God. And look at this last part, just as Aaron was. So as I read this, and I've seen this broken out in different ways, I've kind of rolled some of these items into two qualifications. The first one being he's one of the people. Why does he need to be one of the people? Why does the priest need to be one of the people? He's able to identify with them, and we see that in these verses even, that he can deal with the people in the right way because he's one of them. He understands them, he knows them, he cares, has concern, he's compassionate. And I listed an example here. How about, I think we can understand this as we think about our own representatives. You ever had somebody that represented you that didn't really know you that well, or you didn't feel like they really cared about? Probably a lot of us can relate to that. And I'm not going to, that's one reason when we're electing a senator from Georgia. Are we going to go up to New York and find somebody to represent us, or someone from California? No, we pick somebody. They have to be someone that is here and will represent us, is what we're looking for. Same idea here. We've got a high priest that represents us. That's one of the people. And the second one out of that is he's appointed by God. And, you know, can I just say, well, you know, I really would like to be a priest. You know, I think I'm going to become a priest. I think I'm going to campaign for it. That is not what we see here. James? Very good. And we're going to look at some examples in just, I think, the next slide here. But if you want to see something interesting in the Old Testament, look at Leviticus 8 and 9. And there's some verses there that we don't have time to go through it now, but there's really some verses that describe how God picked Aaron and his sons to be the priest, and how they, what their goal was, and how God ordained them to do these things. It's a very interesting reading if you want to go back and see how God appointed them to do this work. And here it's a few people have kind of got us in this. Can you think of some examples where men appointed themselves as priests? We mentioned Uzziah was one where he went in, and he was mentioned earlier, he tried to offer incense, And the high priest said, no, you're not supposed to do this. Get out of here. And what happened to him? Yeah, he had leprosy. He got a leprosy from taking the wrong role. Any other examples that y'all can think of? Saul, he offered, Samuel wasn't there, so he took it upon himself to take over his role. Any other examples? Yes, Bill? Very good. Korah. And actually, I think I was hoping we could get to this, but I think it's interesting there that we won't look at the verses, but they said, well, we're all holy. You know, we should be able to do this. You shouldn't take this on yourself. Moses and Aaron shouldn't take this on yourself. And we see what happens to him. The ground's opened up, and instead of it being exalted, they're down on their way to Sheol is what the verse says there. Some other interesting, we talked about Saul. King Uzziah we talked about. Jeroboam setting up the places of worship and the priest. And then kind of in between the Testaments, we won't go into this, but if you know the story of the Maccabees and really they defeated Syria and they set up their own priest. And they were Levites, but they weren't of the proper line. That's kind of a more of a history example there in between the Testaments. So this was a big deal. Did the Messiah have a right to be a king and a priest? And that's why he's spending the time on this. You know, it's like I said, I think it's probably kind of lost on us that is this really a big deal? Well, it was a big deal. And we see it was a big deal to God too, wasn't it? You know, these examples that they would have known from. And really with that example of the Maccabees, that's the reason the Jews had a lot of this different sects that they have, because this split and the things that came about of people not doing what God had prescribed them to do. All right, so that gets us into verse 5, which is the qualifications as it relates to Jesus. And the first one we said, appointed by God. We mentioned two of them. When he's one of the people, and he's appointed by God. Those are the two we're looking at. That's where we looked at Aaron and how he was appointed. But so that's kind of the argument. And now he's going to talk about why the Messiah is a priest. He's appointed by God. And you see those verses that we've looked at before from Psalms. You are my son today. I have begotten you. The same God that said, I have begotten you in Psalms 2:7 says, you are a priest forever after the order of Melchizedek. That's in Psalms 10:4. And the writer will spend the next several chapters explaining that one verse. So that's what the next whole section is about is, you are a priest forever after the order of Melchizedek. About this priesthood of Jesus is what he's going to focus on. And Barry talked a little bit about this idea of a king and a priest and how in the ancient world, that was kind of how they had things set up. They had the kings of Egypt, Assyria, Babylon. The king was the priest. And if you think about why that was, you wanted your king to be close to your God. You wanted to, we talked about being in favor with God, and that's how they designed things with their gods. But that wasn't the case with Israel, and we talked about it. It was really because of the Mosaic Law that these two things were divided between Levi and Judah. Psalms 10:110 speaks of the king with no limitations that would be a priest. So we see that in those passages there. And we looked at this chart earlier about a merciful and faithful high priest. I've put those two qualifications in there that to represent man to God, he's one of the people, and this idea to represent God to man, he's appointed by God. So we've kind of filled those qualifications in. And then remind you back to Hebrews 2:7, therefore in all things he had to be made like his brethren that he might be a merciful and faithful high priest in the things pertaining to God and make propitiation for the sins of the people, Hebrews 2:7. Yes, sir.
I think that's the reason for that quotation in the verse 5, you're my son, instead of I begotten you. So he was the son of man. God said, you're my son. So if he's the son of man and the son of God, that puts him in a perfect position to be an intermediary. And then God said, you are a priest. That's God's salvation.
Very good. All right. So to kind of wrap up this section, looks like we've got about 5 minutes left. Qualification 2, one of the people. If we look at those verses 7 through 10, what event does that remind us of? In Jesus' life? The Garden of Gethsemane, right? And we don't specifically say that, but I think we see that definitely in that scene at the Garden of Gethsemane. And I would point you to the words, in the days of His flesh. And it goes back to that idea that Jesus lowered Himself. He came to earth. And this was to meet that qualification that He's one of the people. That He's like us. He offered up prayer and supplications. He became one of the people. And I asked the question, was Jesus heard? As He offered up these prayers and supplications? Yes. He was heard because of His piety. And that word is also, in some translations, is reverence. One of the ways it's translated, I think, is a good rendering of it, is reverent submission, as you think about what He offered up. Did God save Him from death? That's a yeah. I guess it's a yes and a no, right? So he still went to the cross, but He was raised again. So, and we know He did answer God's prayer. He did answer Jesus' prayer. We hear that. We see that in the verse. Yes, sir. Yes.
In response to the prayer, He prayed, "Your will be done." And God's will was that He die, but God still recognized His prayer and His will.
Very good. And maybe Luke that points out that the angels came and ministered to Him. And we're just going to, he learned obedience is one of the passages there. Does that mean he was disobedient since he learned obedience?
Nope.
What does that mean? That he learned obedience?
Don't really
know. Yes. Very good. He learned what it was like to be a man and obey God even when it's tough. Obeyed God in the midst of suffering. He experienced, He became one of us. So that's the idea there. He being made perfect, and kind of the same idea, was He not perfect before? Well, I think the idea here is that He was perfected as a priest. We talked earlier, in chapter 2, about Him being consecrated to be a priest. That's the idea here. And to all who obey Him, He is the source of salvation because He didn't have sin. So He could be that offering for us. What does this teach us about Christ? I think the first thing is, it was hard. We think He was the Son of God. He died. Yeah, He was tough down on the cross, but He faced the things that we did. He went through them. It was hard. We mentioned the loud cries, tears. Agony is what Luke talks to. And that first bullet there, the pathway to glory is the pathway of suffering. The God that gives glory is the God that allows the suffering. And I think if we think we're not going to have to suffer, then I think we're missing out on what is said in the Scripture here. It also tells us about prayer. You see Jesus using according to God's will. And we've got to do things according to God's will. The prayer class is going on now. This is bonus material. This is the, so you get a little bit of the prayer class. But we just got to leave it up to God. We can ask, we pray. We recognize that everything we ask for be according. That everything we ask for is not going to happen. That we need to do things according to His will. And it's a good thing that everything we ask for is not granted, isn't it? We know that God is a good Father, and He knows what we need. Pray with reverent submission. That's the word we saw described as Jesus. Lift ourselves up to where God is. Let's not bring God down to where we are. So getting tied up in these things. God knows He's near. His ultimate intention is to save us. And that's what we see in Romans 8. And then finally, it teaches us about God's love. Who believes that that Jesus went to the cross without God's love? When things happen to us, what do we want to say? It's like, why do these things happen to us? God doesn't love me? You know, that's the things that we... must have got happy with the button here. That's the things that we often say, or we hear people say when they're going through something difficult. We know that God loved Jesus, but He has still went to the cross. Let's make our request known and leave it up to God. We are not God, He is. And I think that's a lot of times what we just got to tell ourselves to get through some of this stuff. But we got to remember that our Savior went through suffering, and that's also going to be true of us. All right, thank you, and we'll pick up with the end of the end of chapter 5, and get into chapter 6 on Wednesday. Thank you.